I think that that's all the official announcements, and it should be a lovely meeting tonight. And I have very great pleasure in welcoming Carol, who is from the western area of New South Wales, who's going to chair the meeting for us tonight. Thank you.
I'm even taller than Margaret. Hello, everybody. My name is Carol. And I'm a happy and grateful member of Al-Anon. And I'm a member of the Fairfield Al-Anon Family Group, which is in the Sydney metropolitan area, and it meets on a Monday night at 8 p.m. I'm both honoured and humbled to be asked to chair this meeting tonight. And in the spirit of the theme of this national convention, I'd ask you all to join in tonight in sharing serenity worldwide. And with that, I'd like to call our first speaker, who is truly from overseas. We had a little bit of trouble with Al-Anon speakers getting a number from overseas, but this person is where it all began, and it's Nancy from Listen and Learn in USA.
I'm Nancy, and I'm from Sheridan, Wyoming.
Hi.
And I'm quite nervous. So please bear with me. I want to begin by thanking you all for the most gracious hospitality you've shown us here. We've been here in Australia now since Tuesday. We arrived in Brisbane then, and since then we've been met so beautifully and taken in and welcomed that it's truly a wonderful experience. And if any of you ever come to Sheridan, Wyoming, and if you don't know where that is, it's on the close to the Montana border, which is south of right bordering onto Canada, please give us a call. We have a AA Al-Anon combined number, and just ask for Skeeter, probably would be the best one to ask for. That's my husband, and he's very, very well known. Or you can ask for me, too, but he's probably maybe a little better known, however. And I'm sure you'll find us. We're not that large of a town. And we'd love to have you come and stay with us and share with us there. Our Al-Anon group is the Listen and Learn Al-Anon group. We meet on Friday evenings at 7:30. We're a new group. We just started, maybe 2-3 months ago, and we have an average of 6 Al-Anon members, sometimes 2, but we may be at the most 6, possibly 8, if we really have a good size group, good turnout. So we are small, but we do have Al-Anon and other groups, you know, other nights of the week also. I've been in Al-Anon now for about 8.5 years, and I started down in Colorado in a small mountain community there. I started when my husband was just came into AA for the first time. I had been aware of Al-Anon for about 6 months prior to that, but at that time I was just did not have the courage to go to Al-Anon. I wanted it very badly, knew I needed it, but I just didn't have the courage to go. I made a few phone contacts, but that's as far as I got at that time. Then when my husband joined AA, I went to Al-Anon, and I remember going to my first meeting. It was such a pleasure, a joy to see other people there that I knew. Our neighbors were there, people down the hill were there, and it was good to know that we weren't the only ones that were involved in this and affected by this disease of alcoholism. Our lives were pretty chaotic at that time. Alcoholism was very bad at our home. I think it was, except for the time shortly before sobriety came into our home, I think it was the worst time that we had. Drinking was very, very bad. Some very, very bad times, you know, were experienced at that time. It was during this period of very bad drinking with the blackouts, very psychotic behavior on one occasion that I can remember, and I had never seen it that before in my husband, that I came to realize that there was a God who was that he hadn't forsaken us or me at that time, and that he was there. We were in a very crisis situation, and I was very frightened and needed help badly. It was a life-threatening situation, and I remember very well, trying to pray to a God for help and not hearing any answers. I didn't think at that time, and it was a very, very frightening feeling not to feel any communication with a higher power, which has always been God to me. And it was the next day, the day after, whichever, but it was, immediately thereafter that I remember I was scouring out the bathtub, and I thought, hey, I'm alive, I'm here today. I wouldn't be if there hadn't been a God up there who had taken care of me, because it was that bad at that particular time. And from then on, I have had this faith in a higher power. I have sometimes had difficulties in maybe relying on my God like I would like to, but I do know he's there. He has taken care of me. He's taken care of my spouse, our children, and I know we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't, for our higher power. And this, through the program, not only for me, but I know for my spouse too, is, it's worked miracles for both of us individually and, in our home. There's a great difference in our home today because of the program. One thing been thinking about all day is one of the first words I heard this morning was love, and I think this is a very important thing in the program, the love and the fellowship. And I know we've felt it being here at this convention, and I was thinking back to when when I was very new in Al-Anon, calling people AA Al-Anon in a crisis, and their willingness to help you and the extremes that they would go to. I was very surprised that these people were willing to take their day, their time, and help me if I needed it. And this was shown me again later on when I finally did have to leave my spouse again. This was right at the end of his drinking, and things were very, very bad, and I did have to leave, and I was very frightened, more frightened I've ever been in my entire life, I believe, and I needed help badly. And to call AA people and, they leave their jobs and they take you. It was, I needed to get to an airport. It was, over 100 miles away. They take you. They find other people in the program. They put us up for the night. And, this to me is beautiful. I will forever be grateful to that. And, hope that someday I can, repay those same type of things, because this is the love that you have in the program. And there's still, I think for me, I know for me, it's taken me many years to become aware of a lot of things in me that I've heard, through the years. In the beginning of sobriety in our home, when I was going to Al-Anon, I still hadn't been in Al-Anon too long then, probably about a year. And there was a lot of things I couldn't identify in me that I would hear at meetings people talk about. And through the years, I'm finally becoming aware of a lot of these things in me. So I think we all grow at our own pace when apparently God must think we're ready to start dealing with and facing the things that we have to face in ourselves. And I guess it's a blessing just to be able to have them be made aware of us when the time is right, and to have a program to work with. There are so many people. I see this in friends that I have that I work with probably. I know, thinking of one particular friend I have now I work with who has hard times, and how lucky we are to have a program, something to to work with and to help us. And I think we're very fortunate for that. I think with that I'll close and say thank you again and hope you come visit us someday. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. I jotted down here a few facts about Al-Anon Worldwide, and I hope you'll bear with me as I share them with you during the evening. Al-Anon meets in 80 countries throughout the world. There are over 17,000 Al-Anon groups, including 2,500 Alateen groups, not to mention the numerous lone members scattered throughout the world. We cannot be sure of the exact number of Al-Anon members worldwide, but it is interesting to note that in 1980, there were 438,000 and 26 copies of the Forum, the Al-Anon Worldwide publication, distributed. This was 100,000 more than in 1979, so we really are a growing concern. And with that, I'd like to call Lainey from Bathurst, please.
My name is Lainey. And I come from Bathurst. And my blood ran to my feet when I heard my name called. I didn't expect it, but you see, I'm Dutch, as you may hear from my accent, and that's most probably why I'm called. I think it has something to do with it that I did come from Holland. I looked for help for over 10 years. Like, I always admitted there was a problem in our home, but I didn't know what it was. But I know there was something wrong in my life, and I wanted help. And I also know that I played an important part, and if I would have a proper attitude towards this problem, maybe it could be solved. But I didn't know what the problem was. I only know that my nervous system collapsed, and that gradually it got worse and worse. And whenever I went to the doctor and asked for help, they always wanted to know what it was. And the only thing that I could say, yes, I cannot cope with my husband drinking. And then I asked, how much does he drink? And he always said, I only have a couple. Whether it was a couple that big or a couple of gallons, he never said. But since he only had a couple, I was told that I was in Australia now. And if a man worked hard, he was entitled to a drink. So, I had to learn to cope with it. And I did learn to cope with it, or I thought I did, but I tried to adjust to the situation. And in the Al-Anon book it says there, with crises, that we do get crises in our life, we try to solve the problem, but we cannot solve. And gradually the partner adjusts to the situation. And that is exactly what happened in my life. My whole nervous system collapsed. I've been on the psychiatrist. I've been to ministers. I've been to social workers. Anyone in the helping profession, I used to seek help. Because I knew there had to be an answer somewhere. But wherever I came, they said it was me. It was all in my mind that I was mad. And whenever my husband and I myself were seen together, he was so calm and collected. And I was a nervous wreck, so no wonder that a man drink like with a woman like that. Nobody understood that maybe the drinking in the home was something that was destroying me. And this is something that I so very grateful for to Al-Anon. Because when finally, after so many years of searching, I saw all this written in the Al-Anon literature. But the very saddest thing that happened in my life, and it is really as a mother that I would like to speak, was that my son, from the moment that he was 4 years old, he started to steal. And I knew it was not normal. But whenever I even there went to seek help, it was all little children steal. But I knew it wasn't normal. And over the years, this little boy, he got very cunning and conceited, and by the age of 8 years, my husband used to say he's more cunning and conceited than I am. And I honestly, he was smarter than his father, and by then his father was starting to gamble. And if anybody knows about gambling, They know about the lying and the conceit that's happening in it. But my son of 8 was smarter than his father. I could not keep any money anywhere. I learned to hide it, but whenever I found a spot that I thought that I'd solved the problem, he found an answer to out-cheat me again. It was like a cat and mouse game. In the end, I bought myself a little box with lock and key, but then he found the key. So then I had to find and solve the problem, and I used to tie it to my underwear. But one day, I was getting changed, and I had to run for somewhere, and when I came back, he still found the key. He somehow always knew how to smell it out, but even then, even when I solved that problem, and he couldn't find my key anymore, he could open the lock. Because somehow on TV, he had seen it that you can open it with a hairpin. And even the locks were not safe. I went to the psychiatrist, and I went there for over 6 months. Every fortnight, I used to travel to this man. And he thought he was doing great with my son, because... And then one day, he said, I'm really getting through there. I said, do you? Last week, when I came home, I found the stolen watches on his arm, and he had your cigarettes and cigarette lighter. And he said, yes, you've got a problem there, haven't you? I said, yes, but what can I do about it? And there was never any answers. And one day, something happened in my life. It was in the home. My husband was playing on me, and my son... I know my husband was in the kitchen, what was that side. And my son was near the bedroom, what was on that side. And I felt like a puppet on a string. If I wasn't reacting to my son, I was reacting to my husband. And I'd been to so many places for help. And I grabbed my head and I thought, if I don't get out, I'll go mad. And if I end up mad, who will look after my boy then? So, and that gave me the courage to leave. And I made up my mind I wouldn't search any more for help. I'd had it. I'd follow whatever was in my heart, and I'd start looking after Lainey, and the rest could go to blazes. But somehow I had to find me again. And 6 months after I was on my own, I met a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had contacted AA previously, but because I didn't have the drinking problem, I had not been able to get through. And I didn't know that you could go to an AA meeting if you were not an alcoholic. But this man took me to an AA meeting. And I will always be grateful for the AA in Port Macquarie who allowed observers in their meeting. Because even though I was not accepted, I was tolerated. But to me, it was as if I had come home. These AA members were telling the stories that had happened in my home, and the psychiatrist had said that I was mad and I was imagining it. And then I realized I was not mad at all. All these things had truly happened. And then I heard about this first step. No matter what we do, we cannot get the alcoholic kept sober. And then I thought, right. And I replaced the word alcohol with stealing. And I admitted that I was powerless over my son's stealing problem, and that my life was totally unmanageable. And then I went to my son and I said to him, listen, Arnold, I cannot help you with your stealing problem. And he looked at me and he said, I know you can't. As if he wanted to say, it is about time you wake up, you old fool. And then I said to him, right, Arnold, we understand it. This is not my problem, it is yours. So from now on, I will never help you anymore. I will always love you. And if you're in a courtroom and you'll be convicted or something, you go to an institution, I will be in the courtroom, but I will not help you, but I will love you. And somehow I think that must have been the first step towards recovery. Then I had my eldest daughter. After I left my husband, she started to play up. And I've never known a person who has hated me so much as my eldest daughter. And when she was 15, she ran away from home, and she became involved with a person who was on drugs. And after she'd left about 2 years, by then I was in Al-Anon, because after attending AA meetings for about 6 months, I was introduced to my first Al-Anon meeting. And I thought, how wonderful. And I started Al-Anon, not for myself, but I started it for the other people like myself. because I myself, I thought I had found answers in AA. But about after 6 months of sort of keeping Al-Anon open, I became an Al-Anon member for me. And by all the problems for my eldest daughter, she started to affect my youngest daughter. And all the resentment that my eldest daughter had for me were passed over to my youngest daughter. To keep a very long story short, I continued to practice the Al-Anon program, particularly hands-off, it is not your problem. Whenever I spoke about my children, Al-Anon members used to say, keep on going, Lainey, it will work. At times they used to pass me the ODAD book for a message they thought they may help me. The message didn't always help, but the ODAD book did, and I kept on looking to find my answers that applied to me. But it did a lot to me that they had thought of me, that they tried to help me, and I was not alone anymore. And also for members who are alone, are on their own and are lone members, whatever the forum did for me, I cannot describe me. From all the way from America, I used to sit with that book in my hand and say, I'm not alone anymore. People understand today. I don't have to go anymore looking for help, and that they laugh at me and say I'm mad. I'm not mad, and all these people know who I feel. And after all these years in Al-Anon, I'm very happy to say that my eldest daughter, who hated me so much, today we are the closest friends. My son, who had this terrible stealing problem, is a bank teller today. And my youngest daughter is 2 years sober in AA. And I shudder to think what would have happened to me or to my children if I would not have found Ellen. 3 weeks ago, I got married for the second time, and neither would I ever have got married if it wouldn't have been for Al-Anon. Another thing, when I left my husband, I called him a monster. But thank goodness to this program, my husband's drinking is worse, but he's still the father of my children. And even though he is very, very bad, last Christmas he came to Sydney and my children spent their Christmas with their father. And my youngest daughter, who is in AA, who wants so very badly to reach out to her father, she gave him a bottle of whiskey for Christmas, and he couldn't understand that because he expected a preaching from her. And she came home, she said, Mama, this is the best Christmas I've ever spent, and I've never got along so well with my father. And this is what the fellowship does for you. And I love you all. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Lainey. I'm very proud to say that Lainey comes from my area in New South Wales, Western area. The primary purpose of Al-Anon as a whole is to seek the best way to carry the message of recovery to families and friends of alcoholics amidst cultural and language differences. One of the ways we do this is through the translation of conference-approved Al-Anon and Alateen literature into other languages, among them Finnish, Flemish, Japanese, Chinese, and of course Australian. I'd like to call Felicitas from Brisbane. Thank you. Felicity or Felicitas from Brisbane? She's not here with us, all right then. Judy M. from Maitland, please.
Hello everyone, my name's Judy and I'm a very grateful member of Maitland Al-Anon. And I'm another one that wasn't born in Australia, but I'm an Australian now. I've got a piece of paper to prove it, which is more than lots of you have got. And somebody else started to tell my story when the very first time I went to an area, wasn't called an area assembly then, up at Port Macquarie, and she said, my husband didn't have a drinking problem till he came to Australia. She said, I don't think it was anything to do with Australia, it's just that the beer's better here. And the same thing happened to me, but I gather he had a drinking problem before I met him, and he definitely had some odd personality problems when we were married, but then so did I. And we came to this country, and we went to live in Bathurst, would you believe? And so I had the problem of my husband starting to drink, and he was there 6 weeks before me, and by the time I got there he was in full flight, and also living in a country town where they did think I was Dutch, and believe me, you've no idea what things people will pull when they don't think that English is your first language. And you know, mind you, I still don't know why he gave me bread when I asked for bacon. I didn't think my accent was that bad. And I really had a double problem. I had three small children, and then four small children, and then five small children. And I used to watch the other people coming home from work. You see, in England, the tradition is that the fellas come home and have the meal and then go out for a drink. In Australia, they go out for a drink on the way home from work. Well, fair enough, but I could see all these other fellas arriving home from work, and my fella wasn't arriving, you know, and I tried the whole lot. I tried the being nice and being nasty and the crying, and, you know, I waiting for dinner till it was, you know, till it was all dried up, or till the kids were too sick, too tired to eat it. And I also had the problem of cultural shock. I read a book called Future Shock, which said it's worse than cultural shock. Well, believe me, somebody said to me, but you were intelligent enough to know what was going on. But when you're living with an alcoholic as well, you know, talk about the insanity. I mean, I am now bilingual, but I wasn't at the time. And and it isn't so much what you say as what you don't say or how you say it. I mean, when you've sat in waiting for somebody to come for tea and they don't come and you don't know why, and it doesn't happen now, so whether I've, you know, I think I must be an Australian by this time and understand the language or something. But that sort of thing doesn't happen anymore, but it can be very upsetting, and you just don't know what's going on. And so I had the two things combined, and I became very odd, very, very odd. I can remember we did a few geographicals. I mean, I thought, well, around, you know, around Australia, I've been around New South Wales a little bit, I think, in Quirindi. This chap said to me, well, in Australia, you know, you call people mum. And I mean, you call people mum when they're mum, but in England, you don't call somebody mum till they're on their old age pension, you know? And this fella called me mum, and I said, either learn what my name is or don't talk to me at all, you know? And, of course, living in this situation, I did get fatter and fatter, and I did at one stage get thinner and thinner, but I've got fatter and fatter again, mixed with happiness this time. And I think I could, you know, sort of tell some of the tales like everybody else, and, you know, but I'm glad to say that in Al-Anon I have forgotten quite a lot of the before, and I don't remember till other people mentioned the before a lot of what it was like. But I can remember some of the things. I have to admit that I'm one of the few husband bashers. And and believe me, that's not as funny as it sounds. My husband is a trained soldier, but he is only the same size as I am, so it's pretty game. I mean, I threw everything, you know. Mind you, now my sense of humour has returned, I would think it was funny when he was putting the high chair back together next morning, but no, not in the drinking days. I had no sense of humour whatsoever. Talk about enjoying being miserable, you know. Now when I make people who are miserable, there's nothing you can do. Once somebody gets the miseries on, you know, it's being so cheerful that keeps me going. And that was one of the first gifts I got back from Al-Anon, was a sense of humour. And I mean, most people who live in England have to have a sense of humour. And if you live in Manchester for any length of time, the weather's so rotten, if you didn't have a sense of humour, you'd never survive. I mean, it really does rain every day. If it doesn't, it promises to. And mind you, I did have a sense of humour when I first arrived in Australia. The first thing we had to do at church was pray for rain, and I thought that was dreadful. I told the doctor in Bathurst, and he couldn't speak for 5 minutes because he'd lived in England for some time. And I've got so many things back. I had a child with a stealing problem too, but I can remember I went to the psychiatrist and I didn't realize at the time I was too stupid or too dim or too wrapped up in myself or too miserable. And he said, it's like this, dear, you get contented calves from contented cows, you know, and I thought, thanks very much. And there was anybody less contented than me at the time. It's no wonder the poor kid was like she was in all of them. And I affected all the children. I definitely affected all the children. And my husband, well, I took him to his first AA meeting, you know. I could still have my finger on the pulse, even though I was this miserable thing. And there was an account. Actually, we read an article in the Reader's Digest, and count to this day, we honestly either of us cannot find the one it was, but it described an alcoholic exactly, and I said to him, that describes you to a T. And I took him to his first AA meeting, and he did go in, and actually he did get some sobriety then. And then somebody told me about Al-Anon, and I'm an ought to joiner, and I thought it was the ladies auxiliary for AA, so I thought perhaps I ought to join, you know, because my I laugh too, and it's not funny, is it? And I'm sorry, but it's one of my things now to save everything up that I do silly and tell everybody so everybody can have a laugh, you see. But there are so many now I can't remember them, and I should hate to tell you what happened between here and Newcastle and here, you know. And Well, I joined, and my husband was in AA, and he was doing quite well, and I was a very good speaker at the time. I was very funny, and I had the whole program sewn up, you know, and he was in AA, and I mean, I didn't need to really to worry about this program. There was nothing wrong with me, and he wasn't drinking. And then, but I really am very, very grateful, because something kept me going, and I don't know what kept me going, but something kept me going, and there were only three of us. I mean, we were really good. Three of us, we used to overrun the meeting time even hour and a half. And but I'm one of the ones too that my husband got worse as I got better, and I'm very grateful for that, because I really don't think I could have handled things if he'd got, you know, if he'd got as bad as he did. But, you know, I began to wonder, though, actually, if I was working the program properly, because, I mean, there's me and Al-Anon getting better and better, and he was getting worse and worse. And but, gee, there's some strange things happen. My husband was doing higher school certificate, and one of the other big things I got from Al-Anon was to have good night's sleep, you know, and to be able to sleep through my husband coming home drunk. Only, unfortunately, he started to wake us up again, and I really didn't think that was on the cards. It wasn't so bad for me, but my son was trying to do a higher school certificate, and he really wasn't getting a fair go. And I was considering having to board him out somewhere to give him a good chance. And just as I was considering it, my husband stopped drinking straight away, and things were going quite well. And the day after my son finished high school certificate, he picked up a drink again and started again. And then it seemed to get worse and worse. And, you know, you're at the stage, will I or won't I? Should I do something or shouldn't I? Or what or not? And he got picked up for DUI again. And, you know, his job depends on driving. So, you know, it's really as that as well. And this is the second time, but I was handling that better, and I'm still thinking, should I leave him, or should I get him to go, or should I just take things as they come? And it was getting worse and worse, and another member came, and she said, now, whatever you do, don't give up hope, because it's when you give up hope that the higher power can't work. So I didn't give up hope, and I just hung in there. And as I said to somebody before, I don't think I was letting go, you know, and I got so tired, I just had to let go, and I couldn't make any more decisions. I just sort of had to, you know, just had to let go. And my husband got transferred to Sydney, And that seemed to be the solution to the problem at the time. But then, of course, I wasn't satisfied, you know. He went to Sydney and he got sober, and then I'm thinking, oh, he won't come back. Whereas before, I was thinking, oh, we should go. And just at present, I'm careless. I think I'm had my feet chopped off or something, because my husband got his license back, came home on holiday, and he had been home 24 hours, and they've changed a stop sign round in the middle of Newcastle, and he didn't know. And he wrote the car completely off, just a write-off. And he has a little pot-pot motorbike, and because I hadn't needed the car for work that particular day, he'd taken the motorbike to... He hadn't taken the motorbike, and he'd taken the car, and he's coming back home. And he wrote the car off, and I think I might tell the story in sequence, because he came home walking. I said, where have you been? He said, well, I wrote the car off, and then when I got on the bus, it ran into a car as well, so I walked the rest of the way. He said, mind you, if I'd been on my little putt-putt, he said, I'd probably have been killed, and I had mixed feelings about that too. I still think I'm going to need this program for many years to come, but I think the one thing I'm most grateful for is the return of my sense of humor, and the other thing I'm really grateful for is a very good relationship with my mother, because she came out to Australia about 9 years ago, and my husband was in the middle of drinking, and I was in a dreadful mess, and she was coming out again, and she was dreading it. And she came out, and she said, I said to her, well, you better come to Al-Anon if you're going to live with us, you know. And I mean, my mother's 70, and she came along to Al-Anon, and she really enjoyed it. Mind you, she was about to put some people and tell them a few things, but they were very nice of her too. And she thought it was an absolutely marvelous program for living, but it's so lovely. My younger daughter's been in pre-Alateen and then in Alateen, and she and Grandma are in the same bedroom, and Bill came home drunk one night, and apparently my mother saying, I'll kill him, you know, just like me, I'll kill him. And literally saying, now let go and let God, Grandma, let go and let God. I really got on well with my mother, but of course I always have a good, you know, good news, bad news. My mother was absolutely marvellous, but I was relieved when she went back. I couldn't keep up with her. Oh, we had to buy an elastic bandage because she ricked her knee in the surf, you know. They don't have surf in England. So I do come from a very funny family, and I hope... I hope next time I see you, I have really learnt that love to love my husband, so that when he does say, I might have been killed, I won't have any more mixed feelings.
The growth of Al-Anon in many countries has been phenomenal, in particular in Central and South America. This is evident when you consider that these countries make up a large number of the 2,059 registered Spanish-speaking groups, registered Al-Anon Spanish-speaking groups. Could you also spare a thought tonight for our fellow Al-Anon and Alateen members in the countries torn by internal strife, such as El Salvador? El Salvador has 22 Al-Anon groups and 7 Alateen groups. Most of the meetings are held by day, as the members are too terrified to go out at night. The meeting places are changed frequently, with members being advised of the rescheduled meetings through the cooperation of TV, radio and the local newspapers. How does that slogan go? Count your blessings? Could I call on Philippa from Singapore, please?
Hi, I'm Philippa, and I'm from Singapore Al-Anon Group.
Hi.
Hi. I'm terrified too. I think the greatest thing about this program is to be able to look out at all these faces. None of them hardly I know. And I love you all. And you're supposed to love me. And if you don't, you better do what the lady from Hobart said this morning and get back on your program. So, anyway, I've got some little screwed up notes here because I thought I might forget everything, and I have. We've started our holidays 3 weeks ago, and we went to, I've been in Al-Anon 8 months, and I was very nervous about leaving my home group, and I was wondering what I was going to do when I wanted to pick up the telephone and ring my sponsor sitting there, and who I could talk to, and they said, don't worry about it, you'll be right. And we got to Auckland, and the day after we arrived there, there was a meeting on, and we went there, and all these millions of people were there, well, a few hundred anyway, and somebody said, where are you staying? And we told them, and they said, pack your bags and come and stay with us. So we had 4 beautiful days with 2 lovely people called Chris and Russ. Russ is here from Auckland tonight. So that was the start of a great holiday away from home. And so we've sort of started our, 16 years ago we started travelling around the world, but we saw lots of airports and pubs, and now we're seeing trees and grass and flowers and all sorts of things. I know my program was working for me today, or tonight anyway, because when we were having dinner, my husband looked at the salt and pepper shakers on the table and said, gee, they're nice, why don't you pick them up and put them in your bag? And I said, well, I don't have to do that sort of thing anymore, darling, but you can if you want to. So I know that I'm working my program, or it's working me today, one or the other. I think... Well, 2 things I've learnt that are very special to me in this program is acceptance and surrender. Accepting the things I cannot change, and also the people that I cannot change. I used to want to be able to change people. And I think it's nice to be able to just accept people, especially AA friends I've got, because there's some pretty weird sort of people in AA, and it's nice to be able to just accept them for their weirdness in spite of it. And I've got some pretty weird friends in Al-Anon too, I might add. And also surrender. And that was a very important part of this program for me, because I never had any relationship with any God. I never had any religion. I never even thought about God, except he was a pretty good sort of person to blame if I dropped something on my foot or I wanted something happened, my car broke down. But now I can see him in a different light. And... Just every day, simple little things, letting go and letting them happen. And they all seem to happen. You know, we just happened to be here. This is my first convention, first of a lot. Tonight, when I first got up here, I thought it'd be the first and the last, but I'm beginning to enjoy this, and I think it might be the first of many. In fact, I think I might get off my program a bit and manipulate my husband to start proceedings for next year's in Easter. And there was a lady in the afternoon steps meeting who said that from September on she waited for one day at a time for this week to come, so I'll be waiting a day at a time for a year. And when I did take a good look at this program, when I first got into Al-Anon, I realised that the program's for me and not for my husband, who I thought was an absolute idiot and I was going to change, make him better. It's for me, and it must come from within me. And I know that when I get cross or angry or frustrated with anybody, then I have to look into me. And I'm the only one who can do anything about that, with the help of God and my sponsor, who, when I said to her, asked me to speak up here tonight, she said, so speak. That's very encouraging. And my friend down there said, when you fall up the stairs, don't swear because you're on tape. That was also encouraging. And when I told my husband's sponsor I was going to write some notes for the meeting tonight, he said, what for? So, you know, I've had so much encouragement today, it's incredible. Anyway, I think I'll end. Thank you all for sharing, and I love you all.
Our very capable program chairman, Narelle, has chosen some very nice and very appropriate ODAT readings for tonight's meeting, so I'll just read one of them for you now. I can take strength and comfort from knowing I belong to the Al-Anon Fellowship, with its worldwide membership all working together for the same purpose. Our little group is but one of thousands. What holds us together? Our many different nationalities and faiths? There are no rules and regulations, no management control, nobody to say you must do this, or you may not do that. There is, however, government by principle, as stated in the 12 traditions, with which each member and each group accepts. Each of us is in his own way Each of us, in his own way, works for the good of the others. What binds us together is common problem to be solved by understanding and mutual service. Al-Anon runs like the little wheel in the old song, by the grace of God. I belong to Al-Anon. It is an important part of my life because it unites me in thought and action to people all over the world who share my desire to fill life with meaning and purpose. I do not know them, but they are my friends, and I am theirs. The more each of us lives by Al-Anon spiritual principles, the more we help each other, no matter how great a distance may separate us. I thank God for helping me to find Al-Anon, which is showing me the way to a new life. Could I call on Laura Ann from Foster, please? And she's not here. So could I call on Harold from Gosford, please?
Good evening. I'm Harold from Gosford. I'm very grateful to be here. The theme, Serenity Nationwide. Now that I've been in Al-Anon, I believe that serenity is a state of mind, you know, an attitude of mind. And I've had a lot of attitudes of mind. And like Judith, you know, I came from Manchester too. And I had the same feeling as Judith. You know, when I came, I knew everything and I didn't want to know anything more. Because I'd been going for months and months and many hundreds of meetings to AA. And I'd learnt this program, and I suppose I should call myself a loner at that period of time. Because when you go to AA, they're not quite as generous as we are. They don't ask you to speak. And everything I read, the slogans, the steps, the traditions, the literature, the big book, I read and I interpreted it to suit myself. And my attitude changed, you know. And I was brought up with a saying that to forgive is to forget. And I forgot the bad parts of my life when my wife was drinking. I forgot those because I wanted to forgive. And I never looked at them. I only looked at what I read in the big book and what I read in the steps to my liking. And then a friend of mine, she sat here on the third row, she encouraged me to come to Al-Anon. And I came rather big-headed. You know, I'll show these people how to live their lives. Poor women, they've suffered, you know. I'll show them, you know, how you can live the good life. And I was sat rather hard on my backside because they showed me. And then my wife really upset my serenity. You know, she says, I'm doing something with my life, because she was working hard in service in AA, and I was just basking in the glory of it. She said, I want a divorce. And I thought, you're a cheeky devil, you know, I stuck up with you for all those years. You don't do this. You know, you're throwing a good man away. And she meant it. She meant it. So I came to Al-Anon, you know, and I got off my pedestal. And the lady that introduced me to Al-Anon, she did the dirty on me. And I joined Al-Anon, and the first night I was there, she made me GR. You know, she really built my ego. So I tried to step down, and nobody would take it. I wanted to be a new member, you know. And my attitude changed again. I wanted to learn and I wanted to share with you, the people that understood me, you know. And my attitude did change, and I got a certain amount of serenity. And then I started going into service, I took my GR serious, you know. Anybody came to a meeting and they didn't stick by the traditions, you know, they were brought into line. The master said so. You know, and some people didn't like it. Some people didn't like it. I did. And then, you know, I found out that that didn't work. Nobody took any darn notice. So my attitude changed again and I lost my serenity, you know. And then I was doing very well. And then the firm I worked for, they said, you're not fit enough to work. You know, you're a sick man. Go home and retire. And I lost my serenity then because I wasn't ready to retire. I loved the staying in bed. It was marvellous. My wife brought breakfast to bed every morning. You know, I loved that part. But I couldn't adjust to not having a wage coming in. I really came to the state where a lot of you ladies came in, you know, short of money. I'd never been short of money until I was put out of work, you know, till I was retired. So I lost my serenity again, you know. And I had to go to more meetings of Al-Anon. I started going to daytime meetings then, you know, with little babies, you know. And I was losing my serenity again. Now I'm deputy grandfather to three. You know, I've got it back with babies. I think I've bridged the generation gap. Because, you know, I was toying. I'm afraid my group, we used to sponsor an Alateen group, and I'm afraid it's going down the drain. We've got two that come occasionally. You know, and I was toying with the idea of trying to round some more up. So the generation gap has come a little bit closer to me, you know. I think I'm conquering that. But now I've bought a boat, you know, and when we get too tied up in all of this confusion that I make, I go fishing and I've got serenity there. It's beautiful, you know, the central coast, we have beautiful waterways, it's warm too, it's not like here tonight. I can sit in the boat and I can forget. When I'm at peace, I have serenity. But as soon as I get off that boat, I've got to come back into this world, you know, and live. And I lose my serenity very, very quick. I have to do this program. That 12th step is the most important one to me. That little part that says, practice. Practice this way of life. You know, I've loved it. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've made a lot of fun out of it. A lot of the fun has turned round, like Judith said, and come back at myself. You know, people have laughed at me about it. But it's my attitude that gives me my serenity. And I thank you, and I love you all.
Al-Anon stretches the length and breadth of the globe, from the 12 Al-Anon groups in Iceland to the Al-Anon groups in Tasmania. We are all part of a worldwide organisation. And while your heads are still buzzing with all these interesting statistics, it would be remiss not to mention the 500 registered Al-Anon groups in Australia and the 80 Alateen groups. And I'd like to now call somebody who's come from a long way in Australia, all the way from North Queensland. Dulcie, please.
Oh, isn't it dreadful? Hello, everyone. My name's Dulcie, and I'm a very happy and grateful member from Cairns in North Queensland. Al-Anon has changed my life altogether. My whole way of thinking, and I'm very, very grateful for it. When my husband first started drinking, I didn't know anything about AA or Al-Anon, and I'm afraid I went down very, very quickly. And I didn't know what was happening, because he was staying out late at night, and I thought he had another girlfriend. Didn't know that anyone could drink all night, like, you know, stay out and drinking. And I'm afraid I reacted every time he came home. And we had some terribly unhappy years when I found out, as I say, that, you know, that he was drinking. We had three small children, and And so life went on, and I went down, and I was just a step away from a mental home anyhow. And then one day a friend came along and suggested that I go along to Al-Anon. I was crying because my husband had, we'd had a very bad night the night before, and my husband had broken nearly everything in the home. And I was telling him what a dreadful person he was, and he really wasn't, because he was really a wonderful, wonderful person, and just the drinking that made him like that. And she said, "Dulcie, would you like along? Come along to Al-Anon." And I went along because it was just a night out, and I didn't like to say no. And so I kept on going, but it took me 8 or 9 meetings before I got anything out of it, because my mind was so closed with my self-pity, my resentments, and I just wasn't thinking straight. But then I've been a very keen reader, and the members gave me literature, and so I read everything I could about Al-Anon and AA. And at last I started to come back to living a normal life. It took me a long, long time, but I gradually started and took all my faults. I found that I was full of faults when I looked at myself, when I started on the steps. And although for a long time I wouldn't read the steps, I read everything but the steps, because I wouldn't take the first one. I was ready to admit that my life had become unmanageable, but I wouldn't admit that I was powerless over alcohol, because I thought, surely to goodness, somewhere along the line we'd have to be able to help your husband or whoever it was drinking. Even though I heard members say that, you know, that you couldn't do anything, but it took me about 2 years before I finally took the first step. And after that, I think the others all fitted into place fairly easily, because I had, you know, I had read Al-Anon and gone to all the meetings I can. I'm a widow. My husband died eventually from drinking, and then he took to drugs, and he passed away with a heart attack. And I was able to accept that. I think acceptance is one of the main words in my... Well, acceptance is one of the wonderful words in Al-Anon, because I was able, through Al-Anon, to accept him, whereas before I was fighting the alcohol all the time. But I was able to accept him then as a sick man, and my life became much better. And I was able to read then with an open mind and listen. And I thought then, when I joined Al-Anon, I thought, oh, this is going to be absolutely wonderful, because I'm going to be in Al-Anon, my husband's going to be in AA. But of course that wasn't to be, because he never joined AA. But I've got so much help from Al-Anon, because I've got all the love in the world. I mean, we came up here to Queensland, and I didn't know a single soul, and my husband was drinking, and I just stayed at home. And I just shut myself up then, when we'd have such... The nights that he came home full, as I say, I'd start to scream, and then he'd start screaming, and I'd be so ashamed the next morning, I'd be ashamed to put my face outside the door. And then when I accepted him as a sick man, as I say, things got much better. And I've got... I think when I first came to Al-Anon, I think it was feeling that I belonged somewhere. I belonged, and people needed me. And I think that's absolutely wonderful, and all the love in the world. I've never known such love, I don't think, as I have in Al-Anon, because we've members. And I think it's absolutely wonderful, because even just the other day when I was coming away, some of the older members rang me up and wished me a happy journey, and they do that just, you know, whenever I come away. And then when I go back, I know there'll be a card on the table for me as soon as I walk inside the door, because we always have our meetings at my place on Thursday morning. There'll be a card on the table saying, "We missed you, Dulcie," and all the names will be there written on the table. And I think, to me, it's just absolutely wonderful, through the steps and the slogans And the Serenity Prayer have helped me, and I'm just a different person altogether, because I think before I just took everything for granted, and now since Al-Anon, as I say, I was saying it happens this morning, I can see beauty where before I couldn't see beauty in anything, and now I can see beauty in the littlest, tiniest thing. And I've been to quite a few places, and as soon as I get to a new somewhere else, I just get on the phone and ring, and there's always someone there. And I think it's absolutely wonderful. It's changed my whole life, my whole thinking, my whole attitude. Thanks very much.
Are you aware that there are Al-Anon meetings in countries where alcohol is forbidden, such as Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates? Many Al-Anon members also live in countries where two languages are spoken, one such country being Belgium, with 137 Al-Anon groups and 8 Alateen groups. Belgium has a Flemish GSO and a French GSO to serve their particular groups. Could I call on Susie from Mount Gambier, please?
Everybody, I'm Susie, and I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon in Mount Gambier, South Australia. I'm not from Belgium, I don't speak Flemish, I don't speak French, but I come from Holland. I'm like Lenny. And I migrated to Australia when I was only just a teenager, and I came from a big family, and there was no alcohol, and I was here about 5 years, and I got married. And this is going world over. I married a Yugoslav, an entirely different person from me. There was no alcohol. There was nothing. There was just a lot of violence. And that marriage lasted for 8.5 years and 2 children. And I had to remove myself from that marriage. Either that, or I wouldn't have lasted long. I have to tell you this, because when I met my alcoholic, I think, without the alcohol, I was already sicker than he was. I had to leave this marriage, and I was so incapable of doing anything that I had to leave my 2 children behind. It was very sad for me, and a very awful time. I met my alcoholic, and I jumped from the fat into the fire. I didn't know what was wrong with him. He used to say to me, "You're such a good girl, at least I'm allowed to drink." And and of course I thought, well, why shouldn't he drink? What's wrong with drink? I had no experience whatsoever. I had never drank myself. And so I didn't see anything that was evil or wrong, but I can remember we went to Western Australia, and we were like fugitives running. And we got into this fully furnished flat, but of course there was no linen or bedding or anything like that. So we got a job, and the first week we got paid. And something strange happened. He said to me, "Don't bother buying 2 sheets, only buy one." And he said, "Well, buy a bedspread, and that can do for the sheet on the top." And I didn't wake up. I said, "Well, he wants me to buy it next week." He says, "Don't bother buying pillowcases. We'll put the bottom sheet over the pillows." So I thought he was a very economical person. Anyway, while I was buying 1 sheet, he was buying 2 dozen down the corner on the phone. Gradually I started to realise that there was something wrong, definitely something wrong. because, you know, people just don't live that way. We did a lot of geographical tours. We went here, there and everywhere. And we became car sleepers. We slept in cars, not our car. I slept for 10 days in a car that wasn't ours and bogged in someone else's backyard. And as a matter of fact, it was in Sydney and Liverpool. See, I've been all over this country. Anyway, it got too much for me. By this time, my husband had sent my children back to my mother and my mother had sent them back to me. And I couldn't cope. I had these two children that were very bitter towards me. And they just hated my alcoholic. And things just didn't work out right. And I knew then there was something wrong, and I said, well, I'm going. And he didn't think I could, you see, because I could never make decisions. I came from a big family, and it was always my brothers and sisters or my father and mother making decisions for me. I was a very insecure person. I always wanted approval from someone else. Anyway, I made up my mind that day, and I was going to go. Anyway, he must have realized I was fair dinkum because he wired home to his parents for the fare, and we went back to where we started off in South Australia. Things were getting really bad, and I became a very, very bitter person, and I was so frightened of failure. I had a lot of fear, and I thought, not again, what will people think? It would be me. It wouldn't be anybody else. And so I stuck around this person, I put up, and I became accustomed to living with an alcoholic. And I went down and down and down. And I came from a very respectable place, family, and, you know, nobody abused anybody. And so there was I, you know, going down and losing my self-respect. I didn't know and didn't care in the end what I looked like. I was afraid to go down to the post office to get my mail because we lived in a little settlement. About 300 people that knew everything about everybody else. And of course, because we were so close together, when hubby come home and he started abusing me, I opened up all the windows so the neighbours could hear what he was saying. And of course, then when it was my turn to scream, they all came down. Anyway, he'd put them up. And he'd say, let him hear what you're like. But this insidious disease made me do many things. I then became pregnant and thought, my God, what am I going to do with this? And I went to the doctor who suggested an abortion, and I hated him for it, and I had it in the back of my mind all the time. I didn't go through with that anyway. And I thought, well, I'll have this child because he's jealous of my two sons and he wants a child for himself. So I had this child, and you all know the story. Things went worse. Responsibility he could not cope with. And because I didn't understand anything and told him, it's only willpower. You're just so weak. If only you used willpower. Well, someone said to me once, Susie, try willpower when you have diarrhea. So you see, nothing worked. Anyway, it ended up with a lot of attempted suicides on both sides and three poor children torn in between. They didn't know whether they were coming or going half the time. And in the end, I became so bitter, I can remember my husband coming home one night, and it was a cold, cold night. And I had the old wood stove burning red. And he came in the driveway, and I don't know how, I still don't know today, honestly, but he could drive 30 miles home but he couldn't do 5 steps to the back door. So I used to drag him out, and I'd get him on the laundry floor, and I'd chuck a rag over him, and I'd tell him a thing or two and say, stay there. But this one particular night he came in and he put his hands on this red fire, and all I said was, burn, you bastard. And that's really sad, because that's the person that I had become. And it's supposed to be the man that I loved. Anyway, he promised me everything. He was going to give up drinking because I was leaving. I'd packed my bags. And so he talked me out of it, which wasn't very hard to do because I didn't know where to go. My parents were miles and miles and miles away, and I had no one there. And so again Susie stayed. And 3 months later the worst happened. He came home one day and burnt the house down. And of course there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. I didn't know about welfare. I didn't know about Social Security. All I thought was, if you go to the children welfare, they'll take your kids away. And so I didn't want to go there. But I had a very good friend. She wasn't AA or Al-Anon. She had no need to. And she helped me in the right directions. I had a house given to me. But of course my husband was not allowed to be on the premises. He was a danger to society. Anyway, that was the start for his move to AA. And he went to AA. And he went really marvellous. And one night he came to my place, and I thought, oh God, here we go again. But his eyes were clear, and his face was happy, and he said, I want to share something with you that I've learned tonight. And I said, you can tell me through the fly wire. I didn't trust him. And so he stood on the front veranda, and he told me all about his AA. And I said, well, that's nice. And the week after that, because we're not as fortunate as some of you that have a meeting every night or 3 times a week. We have 1 a week. And he came back and I let him in. And he talked about this AA. And I really got something out of that. And I thought, that is absolutely beautiful. And I said, why don't you bring him home? And then come Friday night and have a cup of coffee. And so that's what he did. And I used to get all the good china out and all the cutlery out. And oh, these people, they were saving my husband. You know, hallelujah. Anyway, so about 9 months after our breakup, we went back together again. And I couldn't cope. I had prayed all this time for this man to take his drink, for God to take his drink away. And he did, and I couldn't cope. Because I was the domineering person in that family, and what I said, go. And anyway, it didn't work. He stood on his own 2 feet, he made his own decisions, and he became a person, and I was still behind. So I went to AA meetings with him, like a speaker before me that said something about going to AA. And I went to AA for 12 months, and I liked it, but something was missing, and I felt empty somewhere. And this kind old lady come up to me one night at an anniversary, and she said, Susie, do you go to Al-Anon? And I said, what's that? And she said, that's for partners and family and friends of alcoholics. And I said, no, I don't. And I lived so far out of town, I had no chance of going anyway. So she said, here's some pamphlets, take it home and read them. And I read them, and I saw my partner on every page, because I didn't know it was for me. And so I did this for 12 months, and I was a loner. I did contact head office, and I wrote to people, and I rang them up. And I was a loner. And I must have gotten something out of it, because my husband had a chance to go and shift to Mount Gambier, and we got a house, and he got a job in a hospital, and I went 2 days after I got there, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. And when I got there, there was about 5 women sitting around a table. And when I came home, I was ready to give my husband ratsack, and he wasn't even drinking. And it was nothing but a gossip session. And it was absolutely terrible. And I enjoyed every minute of it. Because, you see, I could justify all my mistakes and stupidity. And then I met a beautiful person from Hamilton in Victoria called Bernadette. And she said to me, "Susie," she said, "grab it and hang on to it with both hands, because you're going to need it, because you're going to be a hard nut to crack." And she gave me instructions all the time, by letter, by phone, personally, all the time. Anyway, if something went wrong, I'd ring her up, I'd say, "What do I do next?" All right, so then I became the sheepdog. I rounded up all the sheep and I got bitten. And it didn't work that way. But I persevered. I was GR, DR, call it what you like. I was everything at once because I was the only member there. Everybody left. But I stuck around, and here I am. And you see, I kept trying, and I kept persevering, and I fell, and I got up again, and I never used once as a stumbling block. I used it all as a stepping stone. And you see, I could cope with Susie's mistake, and I got up again, and nobody laughed at me. They all laughed with me. And slowly but surely, all the members come back again, and we've got a lovely group. And today I am a GR, properly. And I love this fellowship. And you know, I can remember when my husband and I came back together again, there was a love of expectations. And if you have any idea of what love with expectations mean, don't bother finding out. Because it doesn't work that way. You know, acceptance was talked about here tonight. Well, I learned to accept people for what they are. I too, you know, grew in Al-Anon, and my 2 boys, the 2 eldest ones, they went to Alateen for a while. But then I had a little bit of a sad story, because one of my boys got on the drugs, and he's got a very, very nice brain, but it's slowly but surely deteriorating. He is really pulling himself apart, and I can't do nothing about it but just love him. And someone said to me, "Give them enough rope, Susie, and they'll hang themselves." But what they didn't realize was that Susie was hanging every inch of the way on that rope. And I believe, as I say to my husband, you came into my life and my children came out of my life. And they're part of me no matter which way they turn out to be. And so today I've got a big struggle. I have got one son roaring around the countryside in Queensland. I don't know where he is. And I have just come to realize that maybe too he's got the tendencies of becoming an alcoholic through talking with it about it with an AA member. And he keeps telling me all the time, "That's what I used to do in the beginning. That's what I used to do." And you see, they say to me, "Have you heard anything from him, Susie?" And I say, "No, no news is good news." And they say, "Well, how can you put up with it?" And I say, "Because I've got a God that loves me. And I've got kids that love me, even though they don't know it today. But they will, because when they need help, and I fall to pieces, I'll be no good to them. But if they need help, and I work my Al-Anon program, then by gosh, you know, I will be a tower of strength to them, and maybe then I can show them that I really care and love them." And, you know, I've got a 10-year-old, and he's a real stubborn sort of a person. But he loves to have this little cuddle in the corner now and then, when nobody's looking. And, you know, he is a sobriety child, and when he was 4 years old, we took him to a meeting, and we stopped before the meeting, and he said to Dad, "Dad, when I get as big as you are, I'm going to drink a lot of beer." And Dad said, "Why is that, son?" He said, "Because I want to be just like you when I grow up." So that was beautiful. Anyway, that's enough of me. I really am enjoying myself. I haven't been here very long. But Armadale are doing a beautiful, beautiful job. And by the way, this detachment bit, I don't like it too much. My husband's in one block and I'm in the other. It's more like going my way, I think. But anyway, we usually go somewhere together and come home together, but we never together in between. But I love this program, and, I get a lot out of it, and I know a lot of people around here that I've seen last year or the year before or elsewhere, and we do travel a lot, and we haven't slept, I think, for about 48 hours, and we've been on the road about, for sure 24, but we had a meeting on the bus, and Lorraine and I, we sang all night, and we drove everybody crazy, but we kept the bus driver awake. And we sang all night in English, and when I run out of songs in English, I sang them in Dutch. I thank you, each and every one of you. Thank you very much, and I love you in a special way.
Betty from Oakley, please.
Thank you. When I first came to Al-Anon, I was full of fear, terribly anxious, and didn't know what I was going to do. I had lived with my partner on and off so many times it wasn't funny, and I'd learnt over the years that I couldn't live with him, and I knew I definitely couldn't live without him, and that was the state I got to Al-Anon. It had a lot of the same things that many of you have suffered, but I could no longer cope with the violence, could no longer cope with the money shortages, could no longer cope with the arguments. I just hated the life that I was living. I didn't like me, in fact I hated me, because I was a failure. I failed this marriage, I failed myself as a person. When I got to Al-Anon, I heard that I could live a day at a time. And I had really honestly believed that I'd been living a day at a time, because I'd been washing my walls and ceilings down a day at a time for a long, long time, trying to forget the problems that I was living with. I was always happy to see my husband go away from me because I knew I was going to have some peace. That only lasted a couple of days, and then I began to worry about what sort of trouble he was getting into wherever he was. And you know, police can come from your suburb telling you that he's in trouble from another state, and I was terribly frightened of this. You see, my husband came 12,000 miles to live in this country, and I identify with the girls that have come from another country saying how strange it is to live here. Well, I just thought I was living with a madman from another country, and I just thought he was a maniac. And why did they all live like that over there? Or was he sent out from there specially to get me? Because I was so afraid of him that, you know, he didn't want to come home to me because I radiated fear. And when I radiated this fear, I got another belting because he was frightened of my fear. He wanted to come home to a loving wife, and I wasn't that loving wife. I guess the greatest thought I had in my mind before Al-Anon was that he came 12,000 miles to punish me for all the Chinamen that I had killed in my last life, and God had sent him here to get me. I started off with one Chinaman that I'd killed in my last life when I first, you know, when alcoholism really started to rear its ugly head in our lives. But by the time I got into Al-Anon, I was up to 12 Chinamen that I'd killed in my last life. And I honestly believed it. I don't even know where the saying came from. I'd heard it, I lived it, and I believed it. Thank God that there is a place that I can come to called Al-Anon, because I believe today that it has given me back my sanity, that has given me back my life, and it's just asked me to follow a few simple guidelines, a few simple rules. My mouth's terribly dry. It's given me the tools to love again, and I hated my husband. I'd been in Al-Anon about 12 months when I first said to my husband, and I had to hide in the refrigerator to do it, "I love you." The hardest thing in the world to me to say, but gee, I felt great, because I'd been wanting to say it for so long, but I'd listened to so many people say, "Why do you have him back? Why do you put up with it?" I didn't know why I wanted to put up with it. I didn't know why I was taking another belting. And as someone mentioned tonight, that they thought they were the only husband basher. I became very good at it too. And it's not something that I'm proud of. I thought I had a lot of patience. In the beginning, people told me I had the patience of a saint. And I believed it when I was throwing him off the walls. I was teaching him to be a good boy. If he was coming home to Melbourne from Tasmania to live with me, he'd be a good boy for that weekend. And then on Sunday night he could go back and do whatever he wanted to. He's been all around Australia for a few months at a time and has come back. I never knew when he was leaving or when he was coming back. And it got to the stage where I didn't know if I was Arthur or Martha. It was most confusing. Today, as I mentioned before, I'm glad that I have got a little bit of sanity in my life today. I learned that through the second step, and that was the most important thing in my life when I first came into Al-Anon, because I desperately needed and wanted sanity. I knew that I couldn't stop my husband drinking. I knew that my life was unmanageable, so I skipped that step. The sanity bit really interested me, because I wanted it. And after a while, when I did get a little bit of calmness in my mind, I was able to look at the things that weren't manageable in my life. I was able to come down off the walls and ceilings. I was able to go to meetings and speak. The fear left me, and that took quite some doing, because I had to keep repeating that first step. I'm powerless over alcohol. To get a good night's sleep. I'm powerless over the alcoholic and what he's doing. And it was God grant me the serenity. I'd never knew what serenity was. And I said it because people at the meeting said it, and it must have done something to them, and I wanted it something to do for me. But I wanted to accept the things that I couldn't change, and I couldn't change my husband from anything that he was doing. And after I learnt that little bit, it was courage to change the things I can. And that's really where my life turned around, because I could see with the courage that I could change me and I could change my attitude. And today, I can honestly say that my life has really turned around. I have peace in my life today. I don't know about a lot of serenity. I don't feel I have it. A lot of people tell me I have it, and I have to trust them, because it's only the Al-Anon members that have brought me back to life again. They gave me trust. They held out their hands to me, and today I hope I can hold out my hand to some people that are coming in new, like they did to me. They loved me back to life. In turn, with all this love from Al-Anon, I was able to go home from a meeting, trembling, saying the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity just to get through the front door and accept the things I cannot change. I was very fortunate. Somebody mentioned at a meeting to me, offer him a cup of coffee. And my God, that saved my life so many times. It was beautiful. As I opened the front door, my mouth was going. I didn't even know if he was in the room or not. Would you like a cup of coffee? Because it broke the ice, it broke the fear in me. They told me, don't worry about him. Worry about yourself. You're the most important person in your life. Today I believe that. If I believe that, things around me are much better. If I think somebody else is more important than me, then my life becomes very much unmanageable. Today, I'm grateful to the Al-Anon program. It showed me how to let go. Showed me how to let God do things for me. And in doing this, after about 9 years of struggling, my husband has had 12 months of sobriety, and that's great for us. He had about 4 months sobriety when he took me to the first convention at Adelaide, and after we left the Adelaide convention, he said, don't ever ask me to come to another one of these bun fights. And I had enough sense to shut my mouth, to mind my own business, that there would come a time when it would arise that I may get to Armidale. And you know, the miracle has happened that I didn't have to do one thing about coming here this weekend. Last November, my husband wanted to come. And that was great for me. It just showed how Al-Anon really does work if you let it work. It only has to start with me shutting my mouth, minding my own business, and anything is possible. February wasn't a very good month. I was told that he wasn't going to take a bitch like me anywhere. And I let that just ride on. Sure, I was huffy, not in front of him. But behind his back, I was very huffy. Very hurt. But the miracle came about again. He came home one night and he said, I'm sorry for the way I've behaved. Would you like to go to Armidale? Now that took 6 weeks to happen, but it happened. Not in my time, but I guess in my higher power's time. And it taught me a lesson. I reacted during that time to some of the things that were going on. But I never threw in about coming away to Armidale, and I desperately wanted to come. And I'm here, and I've really enjoyed it, and I hope I can come to many more. A day at a time is so very important to me, and really it's just for now, and it's a great way to live. Thank you.
In closing, I would like to say that whether we come from Loja in South America or Zimbabwe in Africa, we are all bound by the same 12 steps, 12 traditions and 12 concepts of service. I think you'd all agree that this evening we have truly shared serenity worldwide. I'd just like to remind you that the things you heard were spoken in confidence and should be treated as confidential. Keep them within the walls of this room and the confines of your mind. And now I'd like to ask all who would care to join me in the closing prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.